What we started talking about last week was a basic tenet in Buddhism, which is called the Four Noble Truths, and it was the first teaching of Shakyamuni Buddha after his own enlightenment, and it's kind of a premise that much of Buddhism is built upon. The first is that the truth is that the truth of suffering, he calls it, that life, there is suffering in life, suffering in birth, in death, in living, in hearing or not hearing, in thinking something's going to happen and it doesn't happen. Life is just suffering. That's the human condition. The second one, and we talked a little bit about that last week, and the second one, which we'll focus on today, is the truth of the origin of suffering. The third one is the cessation of suffering, it means that we're not stuck in it. And then the truth of the path leading to the cessation. So it's like, this is the reality, this is what causes the reality, or what we're experiencing anyway. It's not really full reality, but it's what we're experiencing. And there can be a relief from that. We can move away from it. And the Eightfold Path is how we can do that. So that's the overall premise. I'm going to read a poem by Mary Oliver as a way to start this talk about the origin of suffering. And she says, I have decided, it's not really a poem, it's more of a little small essay. I have decided to find myself a home in the mountains, somewhere high up where one learns to live peacefully in the cold and the silence. It's said that in such a place certain revelations may be discovered, that what the spirit reaches for may be eventually felt, if not exactly understood. Slowly, no doubt. I'm not talking about a vacation. Of course, at the same time, I mean to stay exactly where I am. Are you following me? So, when we do zazen, I think we are looking to come more to that place in the mountains or in the desert, whatever, at the beach, whatever is nourishing for you and for your soul. But it's to find that place of peace that is within us and that does exist beyond the suffering that we have because we are human beings. And what she's saying in going to the mountains, I believe, is that sometimes our suffering is what we bring here, that what we live with in this moment. There's lots of stories about, say, men and women who join a monastery and it's all in silence and it's with the idea that they can get away from the world and the problems of the world. And then what they find is that they're furious at this person who's cutting the carrots next to them and not doing it right, according to their way of thinking. And so certainly busyness increases our suffering, but our mind also is a big aspect of what we suffer, how we suffer. So in the Shakyamuni Buddha said that the origin of suffering really is based on the idea that, first of all, that we think that there's a we, that there's an I, and then secondly, that everything is permanent and that it should be permanent, that if I do X, then I'm going to get Y, and Y is going to make me happy. If I don't do A, then B will make me happy or unhappy, depending on what my goal is, what my intention is. And those that can be a fixed view of ourselves, you know, that I'm a woman, I'm a grandmother, I'm a mother, I'm a wife, I'm, you know, all of who I am, I'm retired, whatever. But that there is somehow a fixed me. And in at one level, there is a fixed you, and the level that we all have to work with every day. I mean, we can't go around imagining that we're nothing and nobody, and you know, the car that we're driving is nothing. We can't do that because we will have accidents. We'll bump into people. We can't do that. But on another level, on the more ultimate level, so Buddhism talks about the absolute and the real. So the real is kind of the what's now. The absolute is kind of what's beyond that. So if you take let's say you take the tatami mat and you break it, you say, okay, this is a tatami mat, and you break it down and just, you know, bit by bit, you know, so you're doing, I think tatami mats are made from, I don't know, what, rice? I don't know, Stephen, help me on this. What are tatami mats made of? Does anybody know?
Straw.
Straw, okay. So, you know, the straw at one time was a green growing thing, and another time it was a seed. It's a seed, it grows, it gets watered, it dries out, it gets harvested or reaped or whatever they do. But it will eventually break down, and it will eventually break down, and there is nothing there. There, you can't say, oh, that's a tummy, that. Tatami mat, and physics is actually you know, demonstrating this now, that if we break anything down, it will break down into an atom, into an electron, and you know, they've come up with this other one. I can't remember what it's called, but it's like it's so small that it can hardly be captured. It's like sometimes it's there and sometimes it's not there. It's just so everything will eventually break down into that non-being, and yet there is something there. But what is it? You know, what is that? And that's what. So that's what Buddha is saying. That, you know, before the idea of physics and really studying things and breaking things down, he said there is nothing there. You know, when you really break it down, and yet there is something there. But it's our belief that it is there, that, you know, and that it's fixed and it's infinite. Then we find out that we suffer because it changes. Hakone is going to have to replace the tatami mats at some time. You'll have to replace your car. Your education will be no longer relevant. You know, new skills will have to be found. Our children, you know, are born, grow up, die. Everything changes. There is no fix. So he said that's Shakyamuni's Buddha said that's what causes the suffering, is that belief that, oh. And that will go into, you know, possessions, physical possessions, you know, a house and a car. I was reading a book about American Indians and how, you know, when the Europeans came over, they had this concept of land and, you know, if you settle here, you put your flag up, this is ours. And the Indians had no concept of that. They had no idea that they owned the land. They you know, it was to share and it was to use for the benefit of all beings. And so there's this. You know, can you imagine what it might be? We can't even imagine. I can't imagine what it would be like if we lived like the Indians did, you know, and, you know, didn't have, this is my tatami mat. You know, I stay over here, you stay over there. You know, wealth and status and prestige, and it's always this chasing it, like, if I get this, then I'll be happy. If I get that, or if I can avoid this, I'll be happy. You know, if I can avoid being poor, or if I can avoid my children suffering, I'll be happy. And it just doesn't happen. I notice I don't watch TV very much, but I am kind of a sports fan. So oftentimes right now during the hockey playoffs, I think it's Verizon, I'm not sure. I shouldn't say which company it is because I'm not sure, but they've got this commercial that says, you know, this man asked these kids, what is better? Is more or less better? You know, well, more is better, you know, and so it's, you know, your phone can do this and this and this and this, and that's, you need to have that, you know, because you can do all these things and then you'll be happy, and maybe not. But so our society, you know, just plugs into the idea that more is better. In Shakyamuni's teachings, though, he went on to say that it's not that there is more, but there is, it is not just this, that there is a place, I don't even want to use the word place, because it's an emptiness, and yet it's an experience that of peace and of joy and of happiness. I mean, some Buddhist sects will call that pure land, and it's kind of like the Christian heaven. Others will call it nirvana. Others will say it's enlightenment. But that there is a place, and with the idea of enlightenment, sometimes people think, oh, it's this sudden upheaval and life is totally changed and, you know, I've seen the light and I know my direction and I know what's happening. I think more often for most of us it's very small. It's like a small awakening or a small awareness of, oh, this is what I do. This is what I don't do. This past week, I was sitting listening to a talk, and I was aware that I was all of a sudden kind of not in a mental dialogue with this teacher. You know, like she would say something, and I would, you know, well, do I believe that? You know, back and forth, back and forth. And I just kind of found myself just listening to her, and that was such a different experience. So then my husband was telling me about something, and I found myself in this mental rebuttal to what he was saying, you know. I had never seen that about myself, and it was like, oh, I mean, there's that part of me that said, oh, shit, you know, but there's another part of me that said, oh, I can see a little bit of what I'm doing, and that's not what I want to do. I really do want to be able to hear what he's saying. So now I can work with that, whereas if I'm not aware of it, you can't work with it. If you don't see something different, there's no way to change. It will... I mean, it just exists in your own mind forever like that. So, Shakyamuni Buddha says that beyond our clouds, you know, beyond the reality, you know, the reality, our daily reality of suffering and of life and the experience of life, that the sun behind that is always there. And that's kind of an analogy or metaphor for whatever this is that is part of and yet beyond who we are right now. So when we sit, the one very important value to sitting is that it gives you a time just to focus on what your breath is doing and how often your breath, you know, your mind goes off on these other little tangents and you bring it back, and you know, and then 2 seconds later, it's over here again, and you keep bringing it back. So I was telling Go and Yuko that, you know, sometimes people think, oh, I just want to get to that blissful state. And if you do it, great, but it's not going to last, you know. And so don't hang on to it, and then don't say, oh, I just had, you know, I'm not doing it right, or I just had a bad sitting period or whatever. The other thing, and again, that I would stress is that, you know, coming here on Sundays is a wonderful experience. It really gives us a deeper time. But also, take the time during the week. Just go sit. Sit on the sofa. Just go sit outside. It doesn't have to be. We are so geared towards, I don't have time, I don't have time. But if we just take the time, you know, 5 minutes, we think, oh, why don't I do this more often? It's so life-giving. And so anyway, that's... So the experience of Zazen is both one where we see what we do and what we don't do and what we grasp and what we crave and what we want and what we don't want. it's also the time to really be fed and nourished. And so I hope you can have that, both experiences. I'm going to put a little caveat at the very end, which I really should have put at the beginning, is that I am not an ordained teacher. So what I say to you is just what I've read, studied, integrated, what works for me. It may or may not work for you. You may find a different truth, a different path for you. That's fine. You know, just try to be aware of what it is that you really are looking for and make it more evident in this world. So. I'm going to read you one last little thing because it is about suffering, and I just got a chuckle out of it when I read it. Hopefully I can find it. I tell you, that ant, A-N-T, is very alive. Look at how he fusses at being stepped upon. Isn't that our suffering? We are very alive and I don't want to be stepped on. I tell you, that ant is very alive. Look at how he fusses at being stepped on. I just thought that was cute.